This week on Vaticano, witness the swearing-in of the Vatican's new Swiss guards, explore the Vatican's efforts to revive the faith in Norway, celebrate Easter amidst the war in Ukraine, and tour the iconic Church of St. Louis of the French in Rome. For this and more, Vaticano starts now.
Faith in Jesus, the bond with Him, does not imprison our freedom. On the contrary, it opens us to receive the sap of God's love.
Pope Francis arrived in Venice early Sunday morning on April the 28th for a day trip to the Biennale Art Exhibition, which is celebrating its 60th anniversary, where the Holy See's pavilion, titled With My Eyes, dovetails with this year's broader theme, Foreigners Everywhere. The Pope's visit also holds a deep meaning, as Francis is the first pontiff to visit the Biennale, where the Vatican has held a pavilion since 2013. Pope Francis celebrated Mass in St. Mark's Square with more than 10,000 pilgrims.
Venice, which has always been a place of cultural exchange and meeting, is called to be a symbol of beauty accessible to all, starting with the least fortunate, and a sign of fraternity and care for our common home.
After the recitation of the Regina Coeli, the Pope entered St. Mark's Basilica to venerate the relics of the Evangelist before leaving by helicopter to return to the Vatican as pilgrims and tourists bid farewell from land and sea. Earlier Sunday morning, the Holy Father met with female inmates, staff, and volunteers at Venice's women's prison on the island of Giudecca, where he spoke on the topic of human dignity, suggesting that prison can mark the beginning of something new through the rediscovery of the unsuspected beauty in us and in others. A total of 34 new recruits will be sworn in to the Pontifical Swiss Guard at the Vatican on May the 6th. This date has a special significance for the Pope's bodyguards. During the so-called Sacco di Roma, on May the 6th, 1527, mercenaries of the Emperor Charles V invaded Rome and plundered the Eternal City. At the last moment, the Swiss guards were able to bring Pope Clement VII to safety by way of a secret passage into Castel Sant'Angelo. 147 Swiss guards out of a total of 189 men were killed in the fighting. The smallest army in the world has been protecting the Holy Father and his residents since 1506. To become a guardsman, you must be a Catholic Swiss citizen and have completed your basic military service at home. At the swearing-in ceremony, recruits swear on the Swiss Guard flag. It's an oath that binds them to loyalty to the Holy Father and all his lawful successors, in accordance with their motto, Brave and Faithful.
Go!
As well as swearing to protect the life of the Pope with their own lives, the guards also have more duties. They guard all official entrances to Vatican City and provide visitors from all over the world with information about the Vatican.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. During a new TV interview, Pope Francis was asked if he had any message for Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Pope emphasized that a negotiated peace is preferable to an endless war. In the same interview, he urged all nations who are fighting right now to put down their weapons and engage in dialogue. The full interview will be released on May 19th. Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati may be declared a saint during the Catholic Church's Jubilee year in 2025, according to the head of the Vatican's Office for the Saints' Causes. Cardinal Marcello Semeraro announced that Frassati's canonization is on the horizon. Frassati, who passed away at 24 in 1925, was an avid mountaineer and a Third Order Dominican, known for his charitable outreach and is hugely popular here in Italy. The CEO of Cisco Systems has signed the Vatican's Artificial Intelligence Ethics Pledge, joining the Church's call for ethical and responsible use of AI. Chuck Robbins, the chief executive of the multinational digital communications conglomerate, met privately with Pope Francis to sign the Rome Call for AI Ethics, a document published by the Pontifical Academy for Life in 2020. Pope Francis will visit the northern Italian city of Verona on May 18th on the eve of Pentecost. His one-day pastoral visit has been themed Justice and Peace Will Embrace, a quotation from Psalm 85. In Verona, the Holy Father will meet with pontifical and religious representatives and celebrate a Holy Mass. Pope Francis will attend the G7 summit in June to discuss the ethics of artificial intelligence. The summit, taking place in the southern Italian region of Puglia from June the 13th to the 15th, brings together leaders from Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United States. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni announced that Pope Francis accepted her invitation to attend a session focused on artificial intelligence. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll explore the Church's efforts to evangelize Norway on Vaticano.
The architecture was special and won many prizes. The benefactors who made this possible were primarily Bonifatius Werk in Germany and our own order. But Bonifatius just couldn't have done enough for us.
The Bonifatius Werk is sort of embedded in the structure of the church in this country. And we owe that very generous and creative foundation a great deal.
Founded in 1849 in Germany, the Bonifatius Werk supports the Catholic Church in Northern Europe. Once Catholic territories, they're now considered modern-day mission territories. The Secretary General of this Catholic foundation is Monsignor Georg Austin. Pope Francis appointed him as consultor to the Dicastery of Evangelization in April of 2023.
St. Boniface, Bonifatius Werk der Deutschen Katholiken, it's called in Germany, was founded 175 years ago in Bavaria, in Regensburg. And you know the name of our patron, Bonifatius, Boniface, to do good things.
Could you explain a little bit, why does the Church in Germany have such an interest also in the northern part of Europe?
Yeah, the Pope was asking, it was before my time, it's now 50 years that we have the relationship and a collaboration and supporting in this parts.
And how is the situation in the Nordic countries?
In the Nordic countries, since some years, it's a very international of migrant church, young, but small, and they don't have so much resources for financial things, and we are supporting different projects. One is buildings. We have helped to build a new cathedral and parish halls in Trondheim.
In Norway, Trondheim's new cathedral, funded by Bonifatiusverk, serves as a rallying point for the re-evangelization. EWTN Norway and the Diocese of Trondheim recently launched Mission 2030, an annual conference and initiative pointing to the 1,000th anniversary of the martyrdom of Saint Olaf, the Viking king and patron saint of Norway, who died in battle in the year 1030, and whose remains can be found nearby at the Nidaros Cathedral. The Gothic-style church was Catholic at the time of its construction, but became Lutheran in 1537, during the Reformation. St. Olaf's legacy has continued to attract pilgrims.
The legacy of St. Olaf is deeply embedded in the history, and I think in the spirituality in the heart of our country. And it's, it's rather astonishing and fascinating to see this legacy coming to life again and blooming. I'm constantly touched by the sheer amount of kindness and generosity and the willingness really to roll up one's sleeves and get stuck in.
Participants at the event consisted predominantly of immigrants from Catholic countries and Scandinavians who have converted from Lutheranism and agnosticism.
The Catholic Church has really great possibilities, but we have to act. I'm really excited that this is now coming to life. We're really, really happy to be a part of that.
I see it like the spring coming back in Norway after the long and dark winter. The sun comes up and the birds start to sing the same way. The Lord's decide, the Lord's command, and proclaim, now it's going to be evangelization.
Cultivating this re-evangelization in the Diocese of Trondheim are monks and sisters who have returned after a long absence. Bonifatiusverk followed by providing financial support to build new monasteries for these orders in need.
We had been in farmhouses for 6 years, and then we learned that Bonifatiusverk had a special mission for Norway. And to come into a monastery, back into an enclosure, having a cloister, you can't imagine what it means for us. It opens our soul. It makes us pray. It makes us alive.
I was in Tautra by the nuns in 2006. For a while, and the idea came at this time. The nun came back to Norway, why not the monks? They followed the project, what it means for the church. It was not only to give money, I think. For them, the monastic life contributes to the mission.
Many people say that the faith is going away, but the spirit is, you feel, in the air.
Eastern Christianity, which follows the ancient Julian calendar, celebrates Easter significantly later than the Western Church, which adheres to the Gregorian calendar. Amid these joyful festivities, many Eastern Christians, particularly in the Holy Land and Ukraine, find themselves observing Easter amidst conflict. In the Holy Land, the Christians experiencing these hardships are a minority. In contrast, in Ukraine, where the majority of the population is Christian, many soldiers are isolated, forced to fight in the trenches. Instead of celebrating Easter with their families, they're observing it with their fellow servicemen. This reality affects both sides of the war, as both Russians and Ukrainians are predominantly Orthodox. Against this backdrop, Pope Francis has consistently called for peace, stating that war represents a universal failure. On Easter Monday, he delivered the solemn Urbi et Orbi blessing, urging peace worldwide.
Do not give in to the logic of arms and rearmament.
The Greek Catholic Church in Ukraine recognizes the Pope as the supreme pontiff, but follows the Orthodox liturgy. The head of the Greek Catholic Church, Major Archbishop Sviatoslav Shevchuk, faces the realities of war daily. In March, he shared his experiences in an exclusive interview.
I, from the very beginning, completely entrusted myself, my life, into God's hand, saying, Lord, let your will be done. If you want me alive, it means that I have to serve to your people.
Can you speak about what Pope Francis has said in his role in bringing peace to Ukraine?
Well, Holy Father, the successor of Peter, from the very beginning of the Christianity, was a supreme arbiter of the Christian world. And his position always was supra partes, which means over those who are fighting among them. I have to say, I have to be sincere with you, that this neutrality of the Vatican was not very well received in Ukraine in the beginning, because how somebody can be neutral when there is an aggressor who killing us constantly each day? But then we as Catholics were trying to evangelize our people, explaining the specific role of the Holy Father as a supreme arbiter of the world. So this neutrality was given as an instrument of searching to alleviate the suffering of the people, and probably in the future some sort of channels of communication for possible peace agreement.
The Vatican's high-profile peace mission has been criticized as potentially failed, but Cardinal Parolin endorsed Zelensky's 10-point plan late last year. Is there an update on what impact that might have?
The 10 points of the peace formula of President was a roadmap. And of course, Holy See cannot endorse all points of this peace formula, but perhaps an issue of food security, an issue of humanitarian assistance, an issue of ecology, and many others, Holy See can endorse, and as its commitment to be with us and cooperate to implement this peace plan of our president.
You mentioned earlier those Ukrainian children who were kidnapped and taken to Russia. Is the Vatican's plan to reunite them with their families? Is that continuing quietly?
The Apostolic Nunciator in Moscow and in Kyiv are coordinating the efforts, verifying the list of the names of those children, trying to do everything which is possible to reunite those children with their families.
Ukraine's ambassador to the Vatican said Pope Francis doesn't have a planned visit to Ukraine yet, but do you think that is a possibility?
Well, we are praying for the visit of the Holy Father to Ukraine. We were asking and pleading Holy Father to visit us in the very beginning of the war, because people of Ukraine had some sort of mystical feeling. When Pope will come, war will stop. Is it realistic? I don't know. But Catholics of Ukraine and simple people of Ukraine waiting for the visit of the Holy Father.
Return after a short break with an in-depth look at the iconic Church of St. Louis of the French in Rome on Vaticano. St. Louis of the French, a vibrant testimony to history, art, and the enduring relationship between France and the Vatican, was founded in 1518 by Cardinal Giulio de' Medici, a future pope, in the Sant'Eustachio district near Piazza Navona and the Pantheon. Its impressive late Renaissance facade, designed by Pierre Lastache, features statues of French luminaries, including Charlemagne and Louis IX, and a triangular pediment adorned with the French coat of arms.
Aus dem lauten und turbulenten römischen Alltag treten wir hier.
We step away from the noisy and turbulent Roman everyday life here into a wonderful church space. We are in San Luigi de' Francesi, the French National Church in Rome. These national churches emerged during the Middle Ages as places for pilgrims to gather and became meeting points for different nations, depending on their language. This church is a special artistic treasure.
Und diese Kirche ist ein ganz besonderer Kunstschatz. Sie sind eigentlich virtuelle Erlebnisräume.
These are virtual experiential spaces. And today we will explore a special artistic treasure in this church. Three paintings by Caravaggio.
Drei Gemälde von Caravaggio.
In this beautifully designed side chapel, with these flowing curtains that open up, we see the church's patron, St. Louis of France, San Luigi Francesi, which is also the church's name.
So ist ja der Name der Kirche. Und das ist für mich selber auch ein ganz besonderer Moment.
It is a special moment for me to stand in this chapel and to see the paintings of Caravaggio so closely.
Kapelle als Grabkapelle.
This chapel was meant as a burial chapel for its founder, the patron of Caravaggio's commission, Matteo Contarelli. That's why the chapel bears his name. He is buried discreetly beneath me under this tombstone without a large monument.
Man sieht ihn kaum. Sondern, was hier wirklich
Instead, what truly stands out are these three paintings. What is striking is that we came through the church to this chapel and saw that these paintings are very dark.
Drei Gemälde sehr dunkel sind. Diese drei Bilder wirken so
The realism and drama of these paintings make us feel like they're part of everyday life.
Dass sie mitten aus dem Leben kommen. Zu meiner Rechten, also
To my right, which from your perspective is on the left, we see the calling of St. Matthew, behind me on the altar as an altarpiece. We see how Matthew is writing down the gospel, inspired by an angel.
Inspiriert ist er dabei von einem Engel. Es geht um Matthäus, warum? Weil der Auftraggeber eben...
And on this side, your right, we see the martyrdom of St. Matthew. It's all about Matthew because the patron's name was Matteo. These three scenes glorify the life of this great apostle and evangelist. The calling of St. Matthew is especially famous for its emotional impact. Caravaggio, a painter from near Milan, was known for revolutionizing Rome's art scene.
Der aus der Nähe von Mailand stammte. Um 1600 ist die Zeit, wo...
Around 1600, Rome faced many crises, from the Reformation to the sack of Rome, leading to the Baroque era. Patrons invested heavily in art, transforming Rome into the magnificent city we know today. Caravaggio's first major commission was for this chapel, after the intended artist had died.
Er sollte hier seinen ersten großen Auftrag bekommen. Und tatsächlich, als die Kapelle...
The realistic style, relatable characters, and dramatic contrasts made Caravaggio's art both controversial and popular, leading viewers to reflect on their own spiritual journey.
Wurden auch viele Gerüchte gestreut, dass